is an interview with Vincent Diorio of Youngstown State University Oral History Program, 37th Division Veterans Project, by Jeffrey Scott Sahonic, on this the 22nd of October, 1980, at 1735 Belmont Avenue, Youngstown, Ohio, at approximately 2:15 p.m. Okay, Vince, let's start out with a little bit about your background, where and when you were born, something about your neighborhood, your education.
I was born April 5th, 1916, in what's called the Bry Hill section of Youngstown, Ohio. I completed my grammar school education at Todd School, high school at Rain, and then attended both Youngstown College and Kent State University. I'm a graduate of Kent State University in 1940. Shortly after that, of course, we encountered World War II. And on January 1941, I was drafted into the United States Army. Draftee, $21 per month. At the time being drafted, I was fortunate in joining a large number of my friends and even relatives who lived in the Bry Hill Northside area. We were transported from Youngstown, Ohio, at the time we were sworn into Cleveland, Ohio, and from Cleveland immediately to Camp Shelby, Mississippi, where the National Guard Division, 37th National Guard Division of Ohio, was in training. We joined the National Guard Division approximately January 26th or 27th, 1941. Fortunately, again, for a number of us, were assigned to quartermaster engineers and a large number to the infantry. Mm-hmm. How this was devised, I'm not aware, but as I mentioned here, I was assigned to a medical company in the 112th Medical Regiment. After completing basic training as a medical aid man, I became the company clerk for Company E, 112th Medical Regiment, 37th Division. Mm-hmm.
Hey Vince, what can you remember about the Depression? Can you remember your parents talking about the Depression at all? What did your father do?
My family was composed of parents and 8 children, 8 boys. During the Depression, I remember quite well the fact that practically the entire family was unemployed, except my dad. I remember delivering newspapers during the Depression up until about 1937. I graduated high school in 1934, and there's a period in there I was unemployed, and then in 1937 I was fortunate enough to become enrolled in Youngstown University and worked summers thereafter till 1940 to attain my degree at Kent State University. The most I can remember about the Depression is the fact that there was very little money to be had, of course. Newspaper route helped quite a bit. We all had large gardens in Bry Hill.
Mm-hmm. Was it a strongly ethnic neighborhood?
Yes, Bry Hill is actually the majority of the people in Bry Hill at that time were Italian descendants. We had our church, St. Anthony's, and St. Rock was 2 churches, as a matter of fact, and that was sort of a meeting place for many of our people, our parents, and organizations. Closely knit ethnic group at that time.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember any hardships you had? Did you ever have to go in the soup line or anything like that?
I don't recall going to the soup line, but I do recall the welfare people coming around and actually letting us have some clothing. That was one of the main problems, particularly in our family with 8 boys. We had hand-me-downs most of the time, but I know that welfare at that time did provide stockings and trousers for some of the brothers in my family. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we had a large garden. We kept chickens, we kept rabbits, and the gardens helped out quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But this is what happens during the Depression.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you were going to Camp Shelby, if you were interviewed at all on the train going down?
Yes, we were interviewed, and this is probably the reason why I ended up in the clerical division of the company there. They took a background in education experience, and the fact, not only because of my college education, but the fact that I could type. There are other college people in the organization, but they're looking for typists to actually maintain payrolls and other personnel data for the company at the time they decided they wanted a company clerk.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember what your first reaction was to Camp Shelby when you stepped off the train?
Well, if I can actually picture that in my mind, it looked like a wasteland there with tents all over the place. It looked like something quite a shock to me, because here we come from a city, a heavily inhabited area, and come into almost a wasteland of no population, zero population except for the military. Mm-hmm. And here they tell us there's 50,000 troops here, and you don't see any homes maybe for another 25 or 30 miles away from this area. Mm-hmm. It was a large, desolate area, a lot of pine trees, and you wondered just exactly what type of training we were to undergo. Mm-hmm. But of course, they took care of that in time.
Okay, now, as soon as you got to camp, were you assigned to the 112th Medics?
Yes, immediately we were assigned to the 112th Medics. I can remember quite vividly my first 2 weeks, even though I was in the Medics, I was on KP for 2 weeks until they got their training program arranged and coordinated, and I went from the KP into medical basic training, providing first aid to simulated casualties and first aid emergency treatment for casualties.
Did you get any specialized treatment?
Nothing more technical than applying compresses, able to induce breathing and stoppage of blood. These were about the best I can, and something on gas warfare also, if I can recall. Mm-hmm. But there was definitely a shortage of equipment, to the extent that when we went out on our maneuvers in our training area, we would have placards on some of our showing that there were either an ambulance or a truck. And stovepipes for cannon around there, and uh-huh. Airplanes dropping flour sacks on us. That gives you an idea how unprepared we were for World War II.
Right. Can you remember the atmosphere around the camp at this time? Was the division looking forward to a fight, or did you feel?
Definitely no. We thought we were down there for 1 year because we thought we were in the replace the National Guard Division. We were told that they were down there for 1 year. They were inducted or ordered active duty in October 40. And were to be released in October 41. October 41. Let's say they were here inducted in January of 40, and were to get out in January about 1941, mm-hmm. And we would replace the National Guard. Unfortunately, though, in December 7, 1941, the catastrophe at Pearl Harbor occurred, and this extended everyone's enlistment, not only the National Guard, but of course, we were there. We didn't know what our term of service was, whether it was an emergency declared until, as you see, if we went in January 41, would indicate that we were in the service about 1 year prior to the time World War broke out, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. December 7, 1941.
Mm-hmm. Was training camp tough for you?
No, I enjoyed the training. My personal attitude on this was the fact that we got out in the open quite a bit, and the weather was cold at night, but real warm in the morning. It was so cold at night you needed blankets. We lived in tents. Mm-hmm. We went out in the morning with overcoats and packs and all that. But by midday we were sweating out there, which indicates that the days got real warm even in the wintertime. But overall, we looked at a goal or an objective that we were going to be here 1 year and we can live through this thing. We can actually accept the situation and persevere for 1 year knowing we'd be back home.
Right. What were your parents' reaction to your getting drafted?
Well, I was the first one in the family of 8 boys. Of course, one of the boys was married, but there were 7 of us at home. I was the first one to be drafted. And they accepted this. They figured, well, everyone was doing the same thing. It looked like we would have to go in for training. The draft was law, and there wasn't any opposition to it in my family, because shortly after that, the 3 of my other brothers were drafted in the service. Before the end of 1941, I think all 6 or 7 of us were in the service. Mm-hmm. So we accepted that. No thought came to my mind that either one of us, any of us, would be wounded, killed, or maimed, or not return. I never thought of that. Although we were subjected to and had to undergo quite a bit during our active duty throughout the entire world, that we were scattered in all parts of the world, actually. Mm-hmm. Some sort, I don't know whether it was a bit of luck, we were able to live through the situation without any serious accidents or any wounds or mm-hmm. killed, actually, captured, whatever you call it.
What do you think the impression that the division and yourself left on the town of Hattiesburg, Mississippi?
I think that Hattiesburg, Mississippi had mixed emotions regarding the boys from the 37th Division. They're happy to see us there because we spent what little money we had. I think the females in that particular batch were happy to see us because they were losing some of their boys too. So there was a shortage of male prospects in that area.
Uh-huh.
But there was no trouble. If we ever got into town, there weren't any dates for any future time. There was no problem at all, even as far as New Orleans, Louisiana. We got down there once mud on that $21 a month, and you couldn't get away from some of the girls because there was an overall shortage throughout the entire country by that time. Not a shortage, but they knew that there was a certain amount of allure and glamour to anyone in uniform.
Mm-hmm.
It was something new, and particularly down south. I mean, in the south, I have to say this, there's a certain amount of prestige shown to people in uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, you'll find that out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my personal estimate of that situation.
There was no personal animosity towards you that you were a Yankee?
I didn't find too much of that. I have to be very frank. I didn't find too much. I thought that the Southern people were very hospitable. As a matter of fact, we spent some weekends in their home throughout the state of Mississippi. They showed a great deal of appreciation for not only we were looked upon as soldiers at that time, but the United States, regardless of which part of the country you came from.
Mm-hmm.
They entertained us and they fed us and they lodged us for weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that time our objectives were all that if we were going to war, then we would help each other out.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware of the international situation with negotiations going on with Japan and Hitler's move in Europe?
Yes, we followed one thing, at least in our group, we followed the news quite avidly. We had radio all the time, and we heard what was going on in all parts of the, particularly Poland and all those other areas when the outbreak of the war there. Later on, of course, when the American troops were scattered all over the world, we become more interested in see whether they would whether the war would be over in Europe or would it be over in Japan before.
Mm-hmm.
We followed the American air raids and the battleships, the battles on the waters. We heard those on the radio all the time. And sometimes we were part of some of the actions in terms of defense or offense,
mm-hmm.
particularly in the Battle of Guadalcanal, Bougainville, Armunda, Bougainville, in the Philippines. But I didn't get into the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
I left them when we completed the all the battles in the air in Bougainville and the Solomon Islands.
Mm-hmm. Okay, December 7th, 1941. Can you remember where you were at?
Very vividly. This is, again, we spent some week, at least a payday weekend was spent in New Orleans, if you ever get down. We got there sometime by hitchhiking or taking a freight train down to mm-hmm. New Orleans from Camp Shelby, it is. And I remember staying in a hotel that particular weekend, and at about noon we were going out to get something to eat, and we're down in the lobby, and we're told by the porters in the hotel, says, "Your days are over, you're back. Everything is all over. The war is on right now. The war has been declared against you. Pearl Harbor has been attacked, and you've got to go back to your camp."
Mm-hmm.
We went down the street a while, and we're told to go back and get your bag and baggage and come down here and pick this truck that's going to pick you up and take you back to camp.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back in camp by that afternoon
in mm-hmm.
Pearl Harbor.
Was it a shock to you?
Yes, it was a shock to me, but I still felt that even though it looked appear that a general war was breaking out, I didn't sense the total involvement of myself or the troops or our troops. But at that time, I have to say, I didn't have a picture of how deep or how sudden or how involved the entire U.S. Army would be.
Mm-hmm. You didn't realize you'd be gone 42 months?
I was gone 32 months.
32
overseas.
Months. Okay.
But shortly thereafter, we were then transported to Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania, the College Station area. We were transported by rail under the darkness of night and all that business. No lights on the train, no cigarettes and all that. Blackout conditions all the way through. And we spent maybe the month of March of 42, I think, and maybe through May or somehow. We then went over, we were conditioned again. There was intensive training in Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania. Then we were transported by rail to California.
Mm-hmm. Did you at any time feel that you were going to go to the European theater?
Yes, that would, if you're traveling east from Camp Shelby, it looks like you're going to Europe for the port of embarkation. But of course, I think we merely went to Indiantown Gap to pick up additional personnel and become full complement and flown again and equipment and everything shipped over to California. But we thought we were going out to New York port of embarkation because...
Okay, you were assigned as company clerk at this time?
Yeah, I was company clerk at that time. And of course, you're talking about payrolls, special payrolls, having to do with the requests for discharge and all this other personnel, the personnel items that you become involved in. And taking care of their payroll deductions, their bonds, savings account, and promotion, a lot of people being promoted. And it was fine. I remember working quite a bit then in the office. That was the situation until we got into Fiji Islands. We were getting to Fiji Islands for a staging for at least our part of the division. Some of the division went over to New Caledonia. We went to New Zealand, then to Fiji. And then when we went into the Fiji, I don't know how many months we were in there, maybe 4 or 5 months there, staging again there, intensive training again.
Tell me, when you were in San Francisco, did you go to any of the high spots there?
Unfortunately, no. We were quite regimented in warehouse in the California area, and we didn't get much time off at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we had any of our, the type of leave that we enjoyed in New Orleans. It was quite well controlled and restricted. And they had a tremendous blackout relation in San Francisco at that time. I don't remember getting to any night spots or seen much of the town.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're only there for about 30 days. Went from warehouse into transports.
You remember what transport you boarded?
I boarded the USS Uruguay. It was a banana boat. It had, missed that several thousand on it, but I never slept down in the hold at all because we were about 4 or 5 high, and I never got to sleep in my bunk down. I slept on the board deck, above deck, under a raincoat for 16 or 17 nights.
Mm-hmm. You get seasick?
Never got seasick. A lot of the fellows got seasick just leaving Frisco,
mm-hmm.
where there's some cross, there's some pretty rough seas right around Frisco. Otherwise, it was pretty smooth sailing, except for the fact they had to keep the zigzagging all the way over. It wasn't a straight course, and we had some aircraft coverage on the way out.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware that the Battle of Midway was going on at that time when you were crossing?
I don't recall that, but I think that's when it was going on.
Yeah,
it was going on. Not having a personal radio and with thousands aboard there, we weren't getting any news releases.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was kind of...
Were there strict restrictions on smoking on board?
No smoking on board. Lights out all the time. In fact, you couldn't smoke aboard anyway. You had to go down into the hold and smoke.
Mm-hmm. What was the food like?
Food was lousy. You only ate one twice a day. You're lucky. You got in line in the morning. You had breakfast, and they start the line again for supper. Right? So we ate twice a day. We were fortunate.
Uh-huh.
And salt water, as far as taking the bath, coffee was terrible. The food was terrible. That was the worst, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. What was your reception like when you reached New Zealand?
It was excellent. Again, they just with open arms there. And, we had a little bit of liberty, some time we'd get into town, and it was blackout conditions in the towns in New Zealand. Auckland, New Zealand also was a port town. It was, I guess, a stepping off point for some of our allies there.
Mm-hmm.
But blackout conditions. There wasn't much entertainment there, if I recall. We ate a lot of muck down there. The food wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't bother us. We got into town, we were able to get a steak once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls were very receptive there. We took advantage of, I know. But their boys were, they were involved earlier than we are. There was a shortage of men there also.
Mm-hmm.
So we met some of the girls there. The time was so short that the association didn't develop in anything.
Uh-huh.
At least there wasn't any follow-up by correspondence or anything with any of the girls from New Zealand. Most of us continued or maintained correspondence with our girlfriends back home.
Mm-hmm.
Brothers or so were in the service.
Mm-hmm.
They had email that time. You get all the letters you want out of them. lost it all.
And then a division went to Fiji and then to Guadalcanal, is that
Yeah, I went to Fiji, some more training there. And
What was your function on Fiji?
Again, I think at that time I was transferred to headquarters. Mm-hmm. I got to be a technical sergeant, and again, it was personnel. In other words, I consolidated and supervised all the company clerks' personnel for the battalion at that time. Mm-hmm. Probably had 10 or 12 clerks that reported in, that outlined the work and the directives that came through. Most of the problems had to do with insurance, payroll, and clothing.
What do you insurance?
Let's not say insurance. No, it wasn't insurance. What the heck was this other thing? It was mostly savings account, bonds, and their payrolls. In other words, if they didn't take all their payroll, they could hold on to something or take partial payment. A lot of partial payments were being made. We would pay people in the middle of the month and then adjust their payments by the end of the month. It's mm-hmm. quite detailed, quite
mm-hmm. It required somebody that had educational background.
Well, having started initially as a company clerk, I didn't have any trouble with it at all. I mean, just staying with it long enough that you know how to direct other people.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, of course, when we got into Guadalcanal, the sergeant major of the battalion was promoted to warrant officer, and I was promoted to sergeant major.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had supervision of not only the clerks, but supply, personnel.
What kind of supplies would you be?
Well, we would be responsible not only for the ordinary supplies in terms of clothing and mm-hmm. some, but we were then responsible for medical supplies for the entire division.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about that. We talk about, you know, companies that do first aid direct work at the front line quarter mm-hmm. of infantry. Then we had what we call clearing station or hospitals. Mm-hmm. We had the clearing station, which was considered the hospital for the division. Then we had aid stations in the, what we call the forward areas.
Mm-hmm.
Now these forward medical points were supported not only by our personnel going up there to evacuate, mm-hmm. also to give medical treatment there in addition to
Can you describe one of these aid stations?
Well, you just don't say an aid station. An aid station comprised of personnel. They would set up somewhere with a couple of litters, maybe a tent if they could, or in a secluded area or in a covered area. Mm-hmm. Just set up. Maybe they had on. They had what they call a first aid pack with medicine, with hypodermic needles, for pain and all that, and compresses to stop the flow of blood. And, of course, they would be supported by ambulances to evacuate as soon as possible in litter bearers.
Mm-hmm. So an aid station was like a place to stabilize the
wounded? That's right. In other words, it would be a collection point
mm-hmm.
for either walking wounded or litters. To give them enough first aid treatment to mainly stop the flow of blood and to provide any sedative ease pain.
Okay, now, was there a doctor assigned to these aid stations?
A doctor would not be assigned to that aid station. A mm-hmm. doctor... The doctor usually would be responsible for that, but he would have several aid stations. But he would have, in that place, have non-commissioned officers who had highly technical training
mm-hmm.
administering this emergency first aid treatment.
Is that what a corpsman does?
That's a corpsman. In other words, if there's a fellow comes in there with a terrific wound, an open wound of any kind,
mm-hmm.
they could first apply that compress and stop the flow of blood, get him on the litter and get him out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Give him a shot
mm-hmm.
To ease the pain.
Okay, now.
When they got to the next station, we'd probably get, you see, they'd collect it. Your stations would be all across the front.
Mm-hmm.
Then they come to the central point here. They get more treatment, maybe return this guy back, or then transport him in an ambulance itself
mm-hmm.
to what we call our clearing station hospital, where they'd get into a
big box for the whole division?
Yeah, for the whole division.
Uh-huh.
And you would put him in there and see whether or not they can give him definitive medical treatment. If not, then he was evacuated by air, maybe,
mm-hmm.
or by ambulance down to the... It all depends what the final point was on that island, whether it was aircraft or whether it was ships.
Mm-hmm.
Either a hospital boat out there or aircraft had taken from our island to another island where we had larger medical installations,
mm-hmm.
like a field hospital or a general hospital.
Mm-hmm. At these aid stations, who would make the decision on who got evacuated first?
Well, you have what they call the process of triage. And triage is analyzing and assessing your wounded or your sick to determine who needs more definitive a treatment at a higher station of service,
mm-hmm.
or if he's maintained there and to be treated by local, by the area aid men.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular officer would be a medical officer to determine where this fellow would be evacuated to a clearing station hospital, or to a field hospital, or a general hospital, or taken back to the States,
mm-hmm.
take a bad burn patient or an amputation and all that stuff. Well,
mm-hmm.
he's gone. He's going to be flown back to the States,
mm-hmm.
or to a hospital ship if there was one out in the bay.
All these forms and things that had to be filled out for this process, is that what you...
That was the, well, that's, I had filled them out, but the, as the medical protector for that division, we were necessary. We were responsible for all these necessary forms and all for the different types of medicines and Well, you take a hospital. What does a hospital use? All sorts of
bandages.
Well, bandages, that's the, one of the main things. They have all different sized bandages, the adhesive tapes.
Would you work closely with the doctors in conjunction on what to order?
We had supply officers. We had supply sections.
Mm-hmm.
And these people would make up their requisitions, and you would have regular replenishing of inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also had sections, we had what we call the division surgeon section. This was the statistical section of the division,
mm-hmm.
where they took care of how many people were wounded, how many sick bay, how many dead, killed in action, how many died afterwards, and all this other business. And they would take, this was the information that went out to Corps. So a division is part of a Corps then. We
mm-hmm.
were part maybe of 14 Corps. Corps probably comprised of three more divisions in the islands at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of essential data got to Corps each day or each morning
mm-hmm.
by telephone or by air.
Mm-hmm.
So that the Corps knew whether we needed more supplies or more people, and they would determine by which way the fighting was going, how long or how much more we would remain in that area.
Okay, getting back to Guadalcanal, what was your function? What was your job? Can you remember what the division did?
Well, when I got into Guadalcanal, I was charged with the personnel section. I was still a technical sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the main job is to set up your section immediately and start pushing paperwork.
How long does it take to set up something like
not
that?
Not very long. In that case, we had like each company had equipment. You just set up like a bookcase. You know, you just close it up and lock and key, and you carry it in your hand like a briefcase. That is. And you had a chair and a table, and maybe if your typewriter caught up, and that's all you had. Then you probably had a box of your records for your company.
Mm-hmm.
If you had 100 or 200 people in your company, you had a personnel record on each one of your people there.
Mm-hmm.
And as you lost or gained, you transfer these cases, these personnel files come
mm-hmm.
to the next the company went to, or if you went back, if you always got rid of it, you kept just the fact that you transmitted this personnel record to
mm-hmm.
this next company.
Now, were you usually put inside a tent for this function, or would they
eventually you'd put in a tent, but when you got in there initially you didn't have any tents until you got pretty well established
mm-hmm.
there. You'd be out in the field maybe for the first week or so until it was pretty well established. And you were in a sort of protected area. You weren't that close to where the actual fighting was going.
Mm-hmm.
But you were close enough that you had to run in the foxhole in the day or at night, or the airplanes came over, or we were under artillery barrage or air bombing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to that. Did you accompany the division then to Munda, to the New Georgia campaign?
Yes, yeah, we went to Munda. We had some pretty stiff battles there. We lost, I think if I recall it, we lost one part of an infantry regiment there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fighting was close, and there was still a lot of the enemy on the island there.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I remember flying in there. I took care of some of what they called the... messenger service. This is the time when the division was in the two spots, Guadalcanal and New Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the headquarters stayed back at Guadalcanal, and we kept transporting people
mm-hmm.
and paper and records. This meant that I had to go up there maybe once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm. Did you see any Japanese prisoners or anything like that?
Matter of fact, I saw a lot of live and dead ones,
mm-hmm.
both sides,
mm-hmm.
coming in as prisoners. And a lot of the dead got by our airmen also. In other words, we had a division burial section too.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing them come in 5'6" truck just like logs in there, both ours and theirs.
Was there any distinction made?
Well, they were separate in the different areas, of course, mm-hmm. because in many cases we try to get the bodies back on the Americans as soon as possible, mm-hmm. back to stateside.
Mm-hmm. But you weren't in charge of that particular...
No, that come under the quartermaster. That's a quartermaster responsibility mm-hmm. in terms of covering the dead. And,
did you lose any buddies?
Well,
anybody you knew?
I knew in the infantry, that's where my buddies and I remember losing this officer right from this side of town here. A fellow came in as a draftee with us, a fellow my age. He got to be an officer over there in the infantry. And he was sent out to...
Was that Volk?
Yeah, that was Volk. Mm-hmm. It was not too far. When you get on the island, you're all pretty close there, you know. Mm-hmm. They could be on the hill and you can be in the valley. It's not close. You were on some of those hills.
Did you actually see any fighting going on?
Yes. Matter of fact, when we got into Guadalcanal, there was fighting going on. And I know in the northern section of where we went into the island, we went in and cleaned up after the U.S. Marines were there, mm-hmm. the Marine Division. Plenty of fighting between us and the airfield.
Mm-hmm.
We were fired upon and bombed and everything else as we went.
Describe a bombing raid. Were they heavy raids?
Well, you'd get pretty good notice of the bombing raid. You'd get the siren on and everything else, and you went into, we had the shelters, underground shelters, and you could hear the bombs coming down, whistling down, and you just hoped that it didn't come anywhere near you.
Mm-hmm.
Times it did hit. I remember one time it hit in the field where we thought it was pretty clear, but it knocked trees down and everything else. It wounded some of our men,
mm-hmm.
some of the medics. And the other medics, are the medics in the ambulance were wounded.
Mm-hmm.
Went up to retrieve or to haul the casualties back to the field hospital or the train station hospital.
Mm-hmm. Now you said that sometimes you were fairly close to the action. That you could see it going on. Were you issued rifles?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we issued a sidearm, a .45, and a carbine.
Mm-hmm.
And this was as a result of the fact that the enemy attacked our medics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Geneva Conference rules that you don't attack medics, but they were shooting our medics. You know, some of our boys got shot at in ambulances.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get any training on that until we actually got on the island.
Mm-hmm.
How to assemble and disassemble a .45 carbine and the carbine, which is, I don't know, 16 or 25 millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
I like the carbine. It had 15 shots, 15 rounds.
Uh-huh. You never got to use it, though?
No, I never got to. We may have fired. We would set up perimeter guard around our particular installation. Four corners of our area, we position like four or five men in each position there.
Mm-hmm.
So they would fire anything that they would probably fire. We heard shots all during the night that they didn't move. We fired it.
After Monday, you went back to Guadalcanal. Is that?
Yes, we went back to Guadalcanal, you're right on that. And from Guadalcanal we went into Bougainville,
mm-hmm.
which was a close-quartered battle site.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the fight was over a hill. There were a couple of hills in the front line. And the problem there was the fact that the Japanese came up every night with artillery.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'd come up with sappers and they would attack our lines, mm-hmm. attack the infantry.
Were we ever shelled on Bougainville?
Definitely. Bougainville was shelled not only by aircraft, but by ships.
Mm-hmm.
And the Japanese, usually suicide pilots, or suicide air force that they had, were coming pretty close. Of course, at that time, we had the assistance of the Navy. The Navy was offshore with the long-range guns, plus some aircraft carriers out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the Battle of Bougainville didn't last too long. It was about the end of the rope for the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
It was at the furthest northern tip of the Solomon Islands.
Mm-hmm. What did you do for entertainment, say, on Guadalcanal?
The only entertainment I can recall, we probably went swimming quite a bit when things got quiet. We played a lot of volleyball. We saw a movie once in a while, and once in a great while, some entertainment would come in from this.
In USO shows?
USO shows.
Then who did you, can you remember?
I think I saw Bob Hope. I think I, and I'm not sure of it. What I remember very vividly on Guadalcanal is the fact that Mrs. Roosevelt came there.
Mm-hmm. Did you see her?
I saw her. Very lovely woman, I thought, that time. And I remember a remark she made that they wanted to know why she didn't go to the officer quarters, visit the officer. I'm here to see the privates, she says.
Mm-hmm.
She toured our hospital installation.
Did you ever tour or go through a hospital area?
Yes, matter of fact, you know, we would transfer some of our casualties to the next higher echelon of hospital care, which mm-hmm. would be a field hospital, an evacuation hospital, or a general hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We had to go there and maybe bring in their paycheck sometime, or bring them some news or some mail or anything.
Mm-hmm. Were they paid in real money or script money?
They paid in real money most of the time, but at times we did get paid in script. But most of the time was good old American money, which now you look back, it was a bad thing to do, although a good money was just let us stay in our soldiers' deposits.
Mm-hmm. What was that?
Well, you could leave the money in there, you'd deposit it with the savings account, what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You would buy bonds, and I did that, and I picked up, I left the service. Well, the bonds came home, I guess. I had a pretty good savings account set up, a savings deposit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know where to spend money than anything else.
Mm-hmm. These forms you fill out on that, when a soldier was killed, what would you do with his, say, savings account money and things like that?
Well,
what would you do with all his personnel forms?
Personnel forms would stay, we would complete the personnel forms, if I recall, and close everything out and send it to the adjutant general of the division.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you put kill in action?
Yes, we'd put kill in action or whatever it was.
A type of wound, maybe?
That type of wound or maybe a result of a certain disease or whatever it was.
What kind of disease?
Well, we were afflicted there with
malaria?
As a matter of fact, we were taking pills for malaria all the way through there. Atabrine pills every time you had lunch or dinner or anything, because Atabrine dish there, you had to take one or two.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't watch.
Was that mandatory?
It was mandatory there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but still, a lot of us came out with malaria. I know they told me when I came out that I had malaria. Mm-hmm. And for 1 year, that they paid me a disability of 10% for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I was ever seriously ill with it, but they found it in my blood.
Mm-hmm.
A year later, they said, you don't have any more malaria, about 1946, and they stopped sending me that $10 a month. Because I didn't report any recurrence of it.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad of that. Anyway, so. Then I had an infection ear problem, and they gave me zero on that. I was laid up about a month. Both my ears became infected from swimming in contaminated waters.
Mm-hmm. Was that a problem?
I was pretty sick for 1 month with it. I don't know what they call it. Bleeding ears, they were just green nets all.
Mm-hmm.
I had quite an infection.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a lot of sulfur pills at the time.
If you remember what you wrote on the forms for like diseases the soldiers would get, what was some of the common types of diseases that they would come down with besides malaria? Was there like elephantiasis?
The skin, I was going to say, the skin disease was the other thing. Infection from the fungus in that band and then come to the fungus and they would become affected in their skin, the hands and feet mostly,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes get all over their body.
Mm-hmm. Was this a, would you
it
say?
Was a very common occurrence would be the fungus there because of the nature of the temperature and the humidity there.
Mm-hmm. What was the climate like? Was it susceptible to that type of thing?
The islands there got pretty hot. We were close to the equator there.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty hot during the daytime and the nighttime. Well, if I remember not since you're on the island, there was a breeze at night. But the days got awful hot, real hot.
Mm-hmm. Were there a lot of insects?
And of course, mosquitoes. There were mosquitoes that brought the malaria.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of bugs on the ground, under the rocks, in the brush. You don't know when you'd run across spiders and all these other infestations.
I forgot to ask you earlier, before you went overseas, were the men given inoculations for various things?
Yes, we were inoculated for malaria, for else was it? I know we got the typhoid, polio, typhus. And there were a series of inoculations that we got for those things.
Mm-hmm.
We got tetanus, and you'd be getting at least once a year.
Mm-hmm. It was mandatory that you...
Right. Mm-hmm. Polio, I'm quite sure that polio vaccine we got of some type. I've never seen anyone get sick as a result of these inoculations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to turn over this tape now. Second side of the Vincent DiOrio tape.
By the way, that's Doria, D-O-R-I-A.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Did you ever listen to Tokyo Rose?
Yes, we heard of Tokyo Rose occasionally, and it didn't bother us much, except we probably cursed her under our breath and everything else, but we didn't believe her. None of us to come to her tantalizing invitations and all that stuff or her threats.
Uh-huh. Did she ever mention the division by name?
Yes, she did. She certainly did mention her division. She knew exactly where we were all the time.
What sort of things would she say about you?
Well, she probably, I remember, I think one time she said your officers weren't doing the right thing, or people were fooling around with your women back home, and nothing was safe back home either. You were at the end of the line, so you'd better give up.
But she played a lot of glitter, right?
Yes, she played a lot. That was the best thing about her at this point, I could say.
Now, when you were filling out about the wounded on their personnel forms, can you remember what the most common type of wounds were?
Most of them were stomach wounds, if I recall, and occasionally legs, of course, and arms. But the stomach wounds were the, which was called a penetrating wound.
Mm-hmm. There are different classifications for wounds?
Yes, you'd get, when I mentioned the penetrating wound, which means that went into and exposed the bowels and all that other serious aspects of that type of a wound. And you'd have legs and arms either shot off or dismembered or bad bone injuries.
Disabling it?
Very disabling, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Head wounds in case they either lost their helmet and were shot to the head.
Mm-hmm.
Or these scattered wounds as a result of artillery.
Mm-hmm.
Wounds all over the body.
Shrapnel
would be either from artillery or from what's that other small caliber? It's not the rifle.
Mortar.
Mortar, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of mortar wounds.
Mm-hmm. They said you were shelled. Would the shellings last long?
No, because in most cases the Japanese couldn't actually. Set up a serious, very intensive attack by artillery because of the terrain there.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually lasted a half hour, an hour, maybe every morning, which they'd get some of the shells to land down in our division area, which was considered the rear area, right down below.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other most serious type would be when they were able to get overhead and drop by aircraft, bombed by aircraft.
Were you ever in close contact with some of the doctors or the frontline medics? What was their attitude towards the wounded? Would they look at a wounded man and say, well, here's another one, or would they take a special interest?
No, there was a very concerned attitude. I was very close to the doctor, particularly the doctors in our medical battalion. These would be the doctors in the curing station.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always discussion about certain patients that came through and how serious they were. How they thought they would come out.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some occasions, we would use some of our medical battalion people for blood transfusion, direct transfusion. There was always a concern to get blood to them and to stay with them as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because in many cases, it would be their friends coming through because they were together for a whole year or so.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember who some of these people were?
I don't really recall. You know, this is 40 years ago we're
right.
talking about, but I remember doctors from New York and from Ohio there.
But they were very concerned?
Very concerned, definitely.
Mm-hmm. You know, your particular job, it interests me because when you speak of fighting, you speak of war. Everyone more or less thinks of the fighting man and the fighting that's going on. But it's people like you behind the lines that keep everything going, that keep the supplies coming in. And a lot of times you're not recognized. It's sort of a job that nobody appreciates. Did you ever have frustration like that, maybe?
No, I didn't, because I was concerned in seeing that we were defeating the enemy, and felt that the effort made by the boys in the front line, or those fellows more exposed to the fighting. And you wonder what was going on. Like you'd hear all the firing, you'd hear the shooting, and occasionally you'd get a shell in your area. It was very seldom you got any actual rifle fire in your area. Mm-hmm. But you wondered how the boys did up on the hill last night, and how many casualties, and whether they were getting everything they needed in terms of not only of food, but of ammunition and the personnel up there to stave the enemy off. Because whether it was on the flat terrain or in the hills there, if they didn't hold them there, they would come down into our area. And I think we did all we could to get up there every morning to find out what the heck was going on, what else they wanted, and kept the supply channel of communication open.
Can you remember what battle you suffered the most casualties, the most paperwork you had to go through?
I think it was New Georgia and Bougainville battles we thought were very crucial, and in fact we were in there with fresh troops that we thought
green
we had
troops?
We had some green troops also. They had very little fighting to do at Henderson Field, for instance, on Munda. Was the fact that when we got heavily involved in New Georgia and in the Bougainville area, as far as I was concerned, those two battles, the division did go into the Philippines then. Mm-hmm. They were involved quite deeply also in taking Manila over. Mm-hmm. But we had two combat teams, one in New Georgia and one in Bougainville. Not simultaneously, we took care of the enemy on New Georgia, then went into Bougainville. Mm-hmm. But they were both the same type of battles, as holding the area off and just defeating the enemy and annihilating them there in both those situations. They would stop coming through.
Mm-hmm. So you and the gentleman around felt that you were doing your part?
Right. Mm-hmm. Our job was to get up there and take care of those wounded and get them back to the hospital as soon as possible, give them more definitive treatment. Mm-hmm. And of course to provide the treatment back at the station right next to the front line, or to bring them back to the next echelon, which would be the clearing station, would be our clearing station. That's the division hospital, the clearing station. From there into an evacuation hospital or into a field hospital. Mm-hmm. The evacuation hospital then maybe keep them or maybe send them further back. Mm-hmm. Field hospital, hopefully you could keep them there and send them back into combat. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any paperwork to do at all on the Japanese casualties? Or?
Never got involved in that at all. Mm-hmm. I never got any. I think that would be the AG of the Adjutant General's office, mm-hmm. or the G1 who took
care of the enemy.
Got the information what was happening to the enemy. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't see how much of they could, because jungle terrain, you don't know much what's going on with the enemy except they just stopped coming up, mm-hmm. or come through.
Yeah. You're being in the rear area and having to do with this ordering the supplies and that. Did you or anyone around you get the feeling that the Pacific Theater early in the war was a backdoor operation, that the main part of the best material was going to Europe first, and that you were lower on the totem pole? Did that ever frustrate you? Do you ever get that kind of a feeling? Were you ever told, well, this is just not available?
No, we were never told this, although we knew or realized there were more massive operations were going on in the European theater in Africa at the time than where we were, because we didn't have the numbers there yet. Mm-hmm. And we looked upon ours mostly of an air battle and sea battle then. Mm-hmm. We would see massive flights of aircraft going over. Mm-hmm. We felt these were going up to the Philippines, etc. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was around there, preparing for the invasions there. We knew that we had to clean out these areas of Japanese installations. Mm-hmm. And take care of them, and then set up areas for airfields too. They used the Solomon Islands, particularly the Thompson Airfield. When we got back there, that was a good stepping off point then for the Philippines.
Right. But you never got the feeling that something was in short supply?
No, I never had that feeling. I thought we always pretty well supplied there, at least our division was supplied. We got in there. We had everything there. I can see. We had the Navy there. The CBs were there. We had enough of the medical units there. Mm-hmm. We had some. We had a hospital ship out there several times. We had aircraft evacuation eventually. We had the old problem with Australia from there back to the Fiji Islands and some of the general hospitals.
Getting back to Bougainville for just a second. I understand that after the battle for Hill 700, the rear area really turned into a real hot spot for activity. Gardens were planted and some of the recruits coming off the boats replaced it.
What happened there then? You speak to two, we were getting ready for the Philippines. As a matter of fact, they were at the time I left, they were loading some of the transports for the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
My orders came to go back to school.
Mm-hmm. Were you glad?
Well, I had mixed emotions then. I thought I'd rather go get enough of points and get discharged, but an order came through for me to go back to, went to the medical administrative school at in Texas. So that was in 44 then, late 44. But we were all set. They were loading up equipment at the time that I was flown back to Guadalcanal and then take a transport to Frisco.
Mm-hmm.
But the things, there's more entertainment and everything else. Mm-hmm. People didn't have much to do because the Japs we had defeated, they weren't around anymore.
What did you used to do? Did you, in the evenings, did you sit around and write letters?
I did a lot of reading, a lot of visiting around.
What did the guys used to talk about?
A lot of volleyball, I'll tell you that. Played a lot of volleyball there. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of basketball played there, too, on the islands.
Mm-hmm. What did you used to write in your letters?
I don't remember what I wrote in my letters.
Did you get
I'll tell you one thing, our letters were censored, so we didn't write too much.
Okay.
Sure.
Did you receive all
mail? I remember getting mail that was censored from my brothers from where they are in Africa and Europe and all that stuff. Matter of fact, my dad passed away when I was on Guadalcanal. I didn't know about it several months later. You know, I got it through the letters from my brothers, and the Red Cross wasn't established yet.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that happened.
And then you went back to Texas.
Right.
How long did you stay there?
I was there about 90 days or so, 120 days. I was commissioned as a medical administrative officer.
Mm-hmm.
And from there I went.
What rank did you hold then?
Just a second lieutenant. Then I have to complete. That's really getting administrative work. That's really paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you were trained in everything, in medical processing, the patients there, supply, medical supply, as far as commanding the company. All that business,
mm-hmm.
Adjutant General. And then was assigned to Camp Atterbury in Indiana. And I was up there maybe 5 or 6 months and then sitting it up there. Maybe in about about March or April of 45, right. I got to be a personnel officer in the convalescent hospital there.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of paperwork. Everything there, personnel.
Was that where the came in?
Wounded came in. They had convalescent referrals for a week or 2 weeks or a month or 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they really did everything they wanted. It was a lot of recreation for them, entertainment. They had time off. They could go home or stay.
Did you feel that they got the red carpet treatment?
They did. We kept kitchens open 24 hours a day. They came in any time of the day. We'd go down and get themselves a steak.
Mm-hmm.
I did it myself.
And you stayed there till the end of the war?
I was discharged in October of 45.
Mm-hmm.
And both wars were over by that time.
Mm-hmm.
I just had an opportunity to stay in. But by that time I was a first lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
Which didn't make much. I was asked to stay in, but I just refused. But I did stay in the reserves, actually. I stayed in the Army Reserves for 23 years.
Mm-hmm. Did you get a promotion while you were in the reserves?
Oh, yeah. Not Lieutenant Colonel.
No.
I spent a lot of time in reserves, training in the summer, big time of the year and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what was your most, quote, scared moment? Can you remember if you were in?
Most scared moment, I tell you, was boarding these ships when you had to board the ship at night particularly with this rope. They dropped the rope over the side and you had to climb that with a full pack and a rifle and they had carbon at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a few, not quite a few, but this was some fellows that fell through, and some guys were saved, other guys got crushed down there. And unloading that way, then unloading into the these LCTs, or landing craft, tactical infantry landing craft, going from out in the bay all the way in. And at times being fired upon, and the enemy was still around there. That was the most scary moments I had.
Did you almost get hit?
No, I didn't almost get hit. We could see these planes coming over. There weren't many of them, but we could see them dropping bombs as they came in. See?
Uh-huh.
I see some boats getting hit and some getting strafed too.
Mm-hmm.
But those were the scary moments that I had. Well, the scary moments at night when you hear firing all over the place and no one was coming at there. Yeah, early in the morning or early in the evening when you get the air attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Or artillery attacks early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Where the hell these are. You hear these shells coming down, you know where they're going to land.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
What kind of treatment did you get aboard the Navy transports?
Well, I was never aboard a Navy transport. Well, I don't know who the hell ran these ships. I guess it was the Navy, but they never bothered us. You know, but it was better.
Okay, you're talking about treatment on the transports.
Well, as a matter of fact, when we returned, because we were medical personnel, we ran what we call a sick bay there. We had to run the ship. We care if people just had plain just simple colds or headaches or stomach problems, you know, constipation and all that. So that wasn't too bad. We actually got a commendation running the sick bay on the transport coming back. Going forward, all I can remember about the what we call the escort, the military escort on board our ship, was the fact that they had Marines and mostly Marines that patrolled the ship to keep everything quiet and orderly. Fighting and all that stuff. They allowed a lot of gambling, but then they saw that their orders were carried out, like with certain duties to take care of in the ship, the KP and all that business. The Marines were there as ship military personnel. I never saw many problems aboard ship. My ass, they had boxing matches and everything else going on. We were under, let's say, 17 days. Some guys were aboard ship 20 days before they got physical to Fiji or New Zealand. It wasn't bad at all, except it's close quarters, and I couldn't stand down in the hole. The air was just too bad, too foul. So I slept aboard. Going over, and even coming back, I think I slept above deck.
Mm-hmm.
I got in one of the lifeboats and just covered myself over with tarpaulin and other parts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much. You provided a lot of information and gapped it up of information that we didn't have. And like I said before, when people think of military action, they don't realize that there's people behind the lines doing this type of work. And
there's probably maybe three or four people for every individual person on the front line.
Mm-hmm.
Figure the whole gamut of them in terms of logistics.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. This has been an informative interview. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you coming in.